step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Have you ever been to a national park and visited petroglyphs? And you look at them and say, man, they look like Bigfoot. Or they look like UFOs or aliens. Well, do early Native American petroglyphs prove the existence of Bigfoot? Well, today we're going to talk with author Kathy Strain, who wrote the book Giants and Monsters, Bigfoot and Native Culture. Now, Kathy is the Heritage Resource and Tribal Relations Program Manager, and pardon my pronunciation, Stanislaus National Forest in Sonora, California. Well, today we're going to get deep and find out, do Bigfoot exist? And can the Native Americans help us prove that? Well, we're going to find out. So I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, author Kathy Strain. Hello, Miss Kathy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you so much. And so just to start off, as we were talking before, it's Giants, Cannibals, and Monsters. And I mistook it for Giants, Cannabis, and Monsters. And I was like, okay, is this how she saw these Bigfoots? But then she corrected me. So I was like, that could be a great way to start. But We're gonna go a different direction. Well, first of all, thank you for being on the show. Truth Be Told is always here to bring, you know, the secrets, the mysteries, and the unsolved ancient sites and all these different types of species from around the world that we only hear about in legends. And Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Abominable Snowman, I mean, has been around since the beginning of time. And so I'm curious how you got interested in writing this book, Giants, Cannibals, and Monsters.
Well, I am a professional anthropologist and archaeologist, and I was born and raised in Porterville, California. And the hairy man pictographs that you see on the cover are located just above that town on the Tule River Indian Reservation. And I always had a natural affinity with working with Native people, and they shared a lot of their traditional stories with me. And like many, I thought Bigfoot was really kind of contained to the Pacific Northwest. And so more than a few years ago, I was asked to give a talk at the University of Texas San Antonio about Bigfoot in Native culture. And I was asked, you know, can you see if there's any kind of traditional stories about Bigfoot in these areas? And at first I was really skeptical. I was like, there's just no way. And after I started doing my research, I discovered this whole plethora of stories from Texas and Oklahoma and other states in the South. And I gave my talk. And then I started thinking, well, what if there's stuff in the Eastern United States? What if there's, you know, other stories that I'm just not aware of? And that's kind of what led me to the book, was just putting those traditional stories that are very, very old that predate 1967, the Patterson-Gimlin film, that predate the term Bigfoot, so that people could see that Native Americans have always believed in Bigfoot and that it's always been a part of their culture.
Well, one thing that I definitely realized over the years that I've been doing this, that I remember stopping into the Navajo Nation in Arizona and having a great conversation with at the museum and hearing some of their stories behind the scenes about their sightings of Bigfoots and UFOs, but yet they don't want to share them necessarily to the public. You kind of have to build the trust up to get those stories. How was it that you built that trust to get some of the stories and of the ancient Native American petroglyphs and the stories about those?
Well, I'll just start at the beginning that I have believed in Bigfoot since I was a little girl. I saw Legends of Boggy Creek when I was young. Right. And I decided I wanted to research Bigfoot for a living. And so I had asked my teacher, what do you have to do to study Bigfoot? And she told me that I would probably have to go into anthropology. So that was always the course that I was going to go. I was always going to be an anthropologist. And when I started working as an archaeologist, and archaeology is just a subset of anthropology. So, you know, cultural anthropology, biological anthropology, archaeology, and linguistics. So we're all anthropologist by design. But when I first started my career in the United States Forest Service, I worked a lot with the Tule River Indian Reservation for their cultural concerns, you know, about excavating sites and what to do with artifacts and all that stuff. And they had never met somebody who believed in Bigfoot and was truly interested in hearing what they had to say and not make fun of them and not laugh and treat it respectfully. And that's how I just have always carried myself. I don't judge what people say. If a tribe wants to tell me something, I don't sit there and go, that can't happen. That's not possible. Right. That's not my job. My job is to listen to their concerns, what their beliefs are, and then provide the assistance that I can to either protect that or whatever. And so it's just this natural, the one gift that I've got, I guess, is that I'm able to listen and be respectful.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, most people just want a respect of privacy and also of their legends and stories from their ancestors. I've always wanted to go up in that area to see the petroglyphs. I haven't driven up there yet, but I'm going to one of these days. I'd love to, maybe if you're in the area, to meet you and
Well, just to be cautious, it is on reservation land. So
can people visit
those? The tribe.
Can people visit those or no?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unless the tribe invites you and they escort you to them.
Oh, so, that's good to know that they're protected. So,
yes.
Because I know I went to Arizona, or no, New Mexico, and there's petroglyphs everywhere. And I mean, you could just walk right up to them. And I'm like, how do they keep people from destroying these, you know, petroglyphs? I was like, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, and then luckily for them, when the reservation was created back in the 1800s, they specifically made sure that those, and these are actually pictographs, and so just a quick, petroglyphs are pounded into stone, so they're in the stone themselves versus pictographs are painted.
Got it.
So there's just a different kind of rock style, but they made sure that those pictographs were on the reservations because they're very significant to the tribe. And that was the only way they felt they could protect them.
So what is their description of, is it this one here?
Mm-hmm.
So what is their description of this? Because I always thought about, you know, as kids, when we're sitting down painting and, you know, we're just imagining and making up creatures and making up things on paper. Back then, who were creating these paintings? Were they just normal Native Americans? Were they medicine men? Were they, you know, the leaders? Who created these paintings?
Well, it's outside of the fact that we know this, the tribe, we really don't have, the pictographs are roughly 1300 years old, if not maybe
long
a little
time.
Older. So there's nobody around today that knows. It probably was medicine related, but it tells the story of how their tribe was made. And that pictograph of Bigfoot is actually 8 feet tall.
Oh my
God. So it's made to be life size. And he's got, you can see the hair hanging off his arms. And there's a traditional story that goes with it about, you know, that when they were creating the tribe, they were afraid of the Bigfoot. And so they ran away, and the lines coming from his eyes are actually his tears. And so, but that's, and if you, what's unusual about this is that, that's hairy man. And then if you go over the next figure that has, it looks like maybe a little cross on it, right, is a mother Bigfoot, and she's 6 foot tall. And then the one with the fuzziness on his head, that is the baby Bigfoot, who that's is junior. 4 feet tall.
Huh.
So they're made to be life size, essentially.
That is crazy. I didn't know all that. And so their tradition is saying that, were they living among them, or was this like a one-time sighting, or do they know, was this something that has been going on in sightings from this point until today? Are they still seeing it today?
Oh, yeah. They still have ongoing sightings, and he's very important to them in the sense of that if it wasn't for Bigfoot, when a tribal person passes away, their soul can't move on. So he's that comes and gets the souls and makes sure they get to where they're going. So he's incredibly important to them and their culture. But there is still Bigfoot sightings being reported from the reservation itself and the area surrounding it.
So do they consider Bigfoot more of a spirit than a living being?
No. He has two forms. One is physical, that he exists and walks around and eats and all this stuff that any animal would do. Plus, there is a spiritual part of him that helps the tribe perform their ceremonies.
We've talked about this a lot, especially in the last few years, about Bigfoot and UFOs, the connection. Because sometimes where there's a lot of Bigfoot sightings, there's also a lot of UFO sightings. Do they also talk about you? I know there's no paintings about that. Maybe there are, but do they talk about also seeing UFOs at the same time as Bigfoots, or no?
No, I've never heard them say that, that they occur at the same time.
Wow. Oh man. I just think that's so fascinating. And, so are you just working and, talking about one specific area, or is this all of California? Are you looking at all of the United States?
I was looking at all of the United States, including Alaska and Canada, because they're, you know, a lot of people may not realize that all Native people, including into South America, are all the same people. They're all the indigenous people that crossed the land,
right?
The Bering land, the bridge. And so I felt kind of like there would be similarities in groups, you know, that you would expect California to have similar stories. You would expect certain areas to have similar stories. And it really is kind of true where, you know, the South kind of area, he's a little more violent. You get a lot more descriptions of be afraid of this animal. He could turn on you at any minute and kill you. Versus their Pacific Northwest has very specific stories related to either, you know, he intermixed with, had actions with the tribes, but basically you kind of wanted to leave him alone. You would go, this is his berry patch, and he's going to gather those berries there, and this, we are going to gather our berries over here, and just kind of leave him alone, but respectful of him, his existence. And occasionally you would get stories of a group of bad ones, and the tribes would have to kill them off because they couldn't get them to stop killing or eating their children. But out here, at least, there are definitely some of those stories, but they're not as plentiful as they are in like the South, where, you know, much more violent Bigfoot.
Well, that's interesting, because you're saying that there's groups of them, of Bigfoots, and because, I mean, as you can see in the picture again, it's Mama, Daddy, and Junior. So did they ever, I know it, like mix? I mean, was there any type of, I hate to say it, love affairs between Native Americans and Bigfoot species?
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yes, there is. Yeah. And so there is a very well known, her name is Tonequah. She's Wild Woman of the Woods. And so she whistles a lot. And so she's always depicted like the whistling kind of thing.
Right.
And she was always thought to have lots of riches. And so it was a benefit to a male to mate with her in order to get her riches. And a famous offspring of that is Buquas. And Buquas is wild man of the woods. And he is also pictured whistling, but he has human Bigfoot genes in him, supposedly.
Wow. Are they real tall, or are they normal size?
They're normally depicted as still being tall.
Gosh. So where is this located? Where are they here in California, or also somewhere else?
That's typically Washington and Vancouver, Canada areas where those stories exist.
And what is your take on what they are? Do you feel like they're some type of human species, or do you feel like they're just Neanderthals that developed differently? I mean, what is your take on it?
Well, as a scientist and as an archaeologist, I've never seen any proof that they make or use tools or do anything that is human-like. Right. And so in our ancestry, of course, we don't have a body covered with hair. And so right. that would be a regressive evolution for a human species to suddenly grow hair like that all over. I believe that, of course, we're all apes in the ape family. And I think he is an ape of some sort, but probably more closely related to the, probably the orang, probably split off sometime millions of years ago and became this species. But, you know, until we get one, we don't really have a way of testing that hypothesis. So,
well, that brings us to the question, why can't we capture, why can't we get a good picture? Because, you know, it seems like every picture we get of a Bigfoot is always blurry. Why do you think they're so elusive when it comes to capturing?
Well, I think that they're so rare, the sightings, that you're just not prepared for it. And
right.
so honestly, I've seen them myself.
Oh, you have?
I had my phone in my pocket. It happened so fast and was over with. It didn't even cross my mind to get a picture, to be honest, because I was more enthralled with, oh my gosh, you know, I'm seeing these and I'm running towards them to get a better look. And it just, you know, it just pops out of your head. That's your, for me anyway, it was the least thing on my mind at that moment. And I know a lot of people have said that you're just so surprised, because at first you're in your own mind going, is that a walking bear or something like that?
Right.
You're trying to put it in a category that you understand and know what it is. And by the time it only takes a second or two to go, no way is that a walking bear. But then that moment probably is already over after that. So by the time you figure it out, you lost your opportunity.
No, I guess that would be very, if you're just walking around a corner and all of a sudden you see this 8-foot hairy thing, you don't know what it is, it would be mm-hmm. kind of the last thing.
Well, and then, you know, you also might be scared. I mean,
no, I'm sure
you realize that you're looking at this thing and it could any minute reach out and kill you or whatever.
Right. I'm sure I would, as they say, tinkle a bit. Well, one thing that you're also a part of is the woodape.org. Can you tell us about this organization?
Yes, we are a nonprofit, and our goal is scientific. We are a group of biologists, anthropologists, we got police officers, we got game wardens, we've got tracking experts, we have pilots, we have all kinds of diversity in the group that are all interested in proving that Bigfoot is real, as well as then making sure some measures are put into place to conserve the species as a whole. And they primarily operate in Oklahoma and mm-hmm. Texas and Arkansas, those types of areas. And the beauty of it is if they are able to prove that Bigfoot is real in those locations, well, you know, it's a slam dunk for, you know, the Pacific Northwest. And so in particular, a lot of people don't know this, but there are areas in Oklahoma that get just as much rainfall as the Olympics in Washington. And most people, of course, associate the South with being very dry and
right.
hot, of course, which it is. But but it does get a significant amount of rainfall, and those areas are where most sightings occur, are in places that have high rainfall volumes.
Yeah, I grew up in Kansas. So, in fact, my sister years ago used to clam. I don't know if you've heard of clamming.
Mm-hmm.
They would go to the for people out there, it's legal, but can be illegal if you don't get licensed. So you go to these freshwater rivers and you harvest clams, and they grind it up into medicine or whatever else that they use it for. And she was out in the river and, you know, the woods, and they heard something, and it sounded very heavy. And so when they kind of peeked over the riverbank, they saw a tall, hairy, whatever it was, which freaked them out. And it was, you know, walking at a high speed and walked away the opposite direction. So, I mean, they don't know what it was. At the time there was no cell phones, so they couldn't really take pictures. But I always find it curious when you hear about stuff like that in Kansas and Oklahoma. And, you know, I can see maybe in like Arkansas and certain places because there's a lot of forest and woods. Mm-hmm. But in Kansas, there's not really a lot of wooded area. There are trees and there are some woods, but there's not a lot of areas that's just solid woods to be able to house a family of Bigfoots. How do you think they stay in Kansas or in Oklahoma in certain areas that don't have the coverage that these big forests have?
Well, and that's a very good question, because we do believe that they would have to have some amount of cover,
right.
or, you know, they'd be exposed. And of course they'd have to have resources, food, you know, water,
right.
those types of things. And so one of the things we really don't know about the species is how far do they go? Are they willing to walk several hundred miles? Is that something normal? Is that rare? We don't know what those patterns are yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to say. It may be that there was a resource there at that time in Kansas that this Bigfoot was experienced with. He may have only been there that one time,
right.
that year. Got what he needed. Maybe it was those freshwater clams.
Right.
And then he never came back until next year. We're kind of toying with that idea here in the county next to me, that this gentleman's been having this problem that happens about every 6 months, where he finds a footprint or something odd happens, but then 6 months go by with absolutely nothing happening. And then it happens for one night, 6 months later again.
Right.
And so we don't know, is this thing, I believe it to be Bigfoot based on the footprint that was found, is it making some kind of round and he only comes back around every 6 months? Is this something we can then predict and be prepared when it comes back in another 6 months? And is he going up into the mountains and coming back down? Is he just going in a big circle? I mean, those are the questions that, you know, we would want to know about. How does it live on the landscape, just like every other animal? Because in order,
right.
to conserve it, we have to know what we are conserving. And so if they need 1,000 acres, 10,000 acres, they only need 100 acres, you know, those are, I'd love to know the answer to that.
Yeah, me too, because like I said, if, you know, more, these are where I'm from, it's more strip woods, you know, because most mm-hmm. of the farmers have cut out big sections for, you know, plowing their wheat and soybean, whatever they're growing. And to walk across one of those fields, I mean, it would be very easily seen, you know, trying to go anywhere. So that's why I was like,
yeah.
That's why sometimes I think, is there like a portal or a UFO or something that can transport this being or this Sasquatch or Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it, to another place. So that's why it's like you, it's very confusing sometimes. You're like, how would they be seen in this particular part of the country when there's not a lot there to cover them? So,
well, yeah. and movement can also happen at nighttime when you know, we traditionally think he's nocturnal, but there's just as many daylight sightings as there is night sightings. And so it isn't a workable kind of hypothesis at this point, but obviously your sister saw something. She believes it to be maybe a Bigfoot. And so I don't have another explanation. Well, good for you.
Right.
See that and have that experience, but I can't explain it any other time. And, you know, and that's why, you know, think about it. What was the chances that somebody would be there? Maybe that one time that year to even see it. And so that's how random they are.
Yeah. Her and her husband saw it. So that's yeah, pretty. It was pretty cool. I wish I could have been there to see it. I know also when I grow up, we don't do it anymore. But when I was growing up, we used to trap. We used to trap animals. And so also you used to follow their tracks. Have you ever had some like a tracker come in? And if so, what's the longest you've ever tracked a Bigfoot?
Well, I actually don't know the answer to that, but we do have a tracker and who's very good. Unfortunately, Oklahoma soils aren't really great for leaving footprints. They're pretty shallow and really, really, really rocky. But if you look on the website, we do have a paper called Tag 7. And a couple of years ago, because of the game wardens and biologists that we have in the group, one of our biologists said, you know, when we want to know what an animal's doing, we tag them with these radio devices. And so we said, well, that's a great idea. Why don't we do that? And so the paper's more detailed, but essentially in Oklahoma, they get these burrs that are like this big, they're huge. And we were able to work putting that tag into that burr so that it would get in the hair of an animal, get it all tangled up, and then when it pulls away, it then starts the radio transmission, and then we use a device to track it.
Nice.
And we had hung all those at, I believe, 7 or 8 feet high, and we got one.
Oh, wow.
That was tagged. And so, and we were able to track it using the radio receiver, I guess is the best word to say, and we were able to track it where it was going throughout that landscape. And so there's more detail about that in that paper because it was active when bears were in hibernation. So we know it wasn't a bear, and we were able to discount several other species that there's no other way this could have been if another animal except a wood ape.
Wow, that's and when you say wood ape, what is that just meaning in like the forest and the wood, like hanging out? Yeah.
It was just an effort to try to maybe there's a lot of stigmatism with the term Bigfoot or Sasquatch and people the second they hear it they start giggling and
they're like,
you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. And so we're just trying to, you know, use a word that may be more appropriate.
And what is some of the backlash that you get for yourself and even your organization from other scientists that may try to discredit you guys?
I personally don't get any flack at all.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I think most people are afraid of me, so I think that's a good thing. Because if you mess with me, I won't approve your project. So.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, so there's some fear factor in there. You know, you always do get criticism because, you know, we don't spend other people's money. We spend our own money doing Bigfooting. And of course, people have always got to go, well, why are you spending your money on that? And then for me, I always want to say, well, what business is it of yours how I spend my money? That's, you know, I may not agree that you're buying Pokemon cards, and I don't complain about that. So it's to each their own.
Right.
But I'm not into... Science is correct that we need more than what we have in order to prove that a Bigfoot exists. And so if a scientist wants to criticize, I'm not going to believe the Patterson-Gimlin film, or I'm not going to accept, you know, prints as being evidence, then that's fine. The proof really is on us to provide that. And so, but we do have quite a bit of scientists that are in our groups that are in major universities because they are compelled by what we have collected. We do have, if you look on the website, there is the Wachita project report that kind of summarizes about a 5 years worth of research that you can read, and there's some audio and stuff like that as well that you can listen to. But, you know, overall, I'm not concerned by what other people say or even say about the organization, because our goal is to prove that they are real and we stay on mission.
Yeah, and Robert in the chat room also kind of said the same. How close does she think that we are finally having scientific evidence of Bigfoot existence? The good thing is there's no scientific evidence that it doesn't exist. So that's key.
Yeah, you can't
prove
it. No.
That's key.
So, and we're not the only ones. There's the Olympic Project, and there's several other groups that are, for me anyway, what my belief system is that we need to do things more scientifically.
Right.
We need to make sure that when you find a footprint, that you're putting a scale next to it and getting a good photograph, writing down the date, all those things. And that's part of what our goal is as a group, is to, okay, we may not solve it here. You may be the one that does it, but then please use these methods so that we can verify what you found. So please be scientific. You know, use a recorder when you hear noises and note the date and the time, and use a journal to write down significant things so that you don't forget. Because, you know, as you get older, of course, you're going to think, oh, well, I'll remember when I did that. And I can't even remember what I had for dinner last night. And so it's important that you just try to use those methods in order to capture the data. And maybe we'll start seeing some patterns. Here's our data that we have from Oklahoma. Here's this other person's data from, you know, California. And here's, you know, data from Washington. And all of a sudden, now we can see a pattern of what is common among all this species, because it's just one species. It's not a different species in each location. And use that then to get the specimen or get the DNA that we need.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Now, what is your speculation of or estimate of how many Bigfoot species or Bigfoot what do you call them? Bigfoot out there. How many do you think are out there?
Well, it's hard to tell, but it has to be a breeding population at least in each location, and it has to be not so high that they are like bear, where you just drive through the countryside and you see a bear and you can see a Bigfoot too. So it's somewhere in between that. And I honestly, I don't know what that really might be. I speculated that maybe it's around 20,000. It's certainly not a million. It's certainly not, you know, half a million, and it's certainly not one. So it's somewhere in that scale. And right now we're not even entirely certain. Do they live in family groups? Do moms stay with their children?
Right.
And the dad is off wandering somewhere roguely and comes back when he's ready to? Or do they always live in a group system? And so it's difficult to know. And how long does a female Bigfoot
produce?
Is pregnant?
Yeah.
How long before the next time she's pregnant? What is the growth rate of a Bigfoot? So if I see an infant this year, can I next year guarantee that I'm going to see something like a toddler size? Or is it you're an infant for 5 minutes and the next thing you know, you're 3 feet tall? We just don't know that information. But 20,000 is my best guess.
Well, that, I mean, 20,000, I mean, there's definitely some inbreeding going on. And as with humans, I mean, it's not a good wise decision to do that. I'm curious on your take of that. And also, are like elephants in certain species are very monogamous? Do you know if they're monogamous to each other, or is he out catting around while mama's home raising the
There's no way to know. All we know is what, you know, Jane Goodall, other primatologists that have studied the orangutans and chimps and all those. And we try to think about that if he is a primate, an ape of some sort, it's likely that some of those behaviors are similar.
Right.
But then you have the bonobos, which are, if you know who that species is, which is off the chart of sexual behavior that is uncommon to the ape species. And so is Bigfoot a copy of that, or are they more like what gorillas are? I mean, it's difficult to know. And so that would be, of course, that would be the goal. You prove that they're real, you get some funding from wildlife societies or the government to put a Jane Goodall out in the forest and mm-hmm. start making some of those observations of, this is what I observed. It's always three females that are of breeding age that all have kids, and we don't see dad for, 6 months, or they're always together all the time, 24/7.
Do you feel that they, just like human species, we are evolving, taller, bigger, as our species is getting thousands of years old or tens of thousands mm-hmm. of years old. How do you feel about the evolution of Bigfoot? It seems like a lot of people, like you said, this is 1,300 years ago, and it seems to be very similar every story.
Well, yeah, but we've only been recording stories, oral tradition from Native Americans, that's thousands of years
right,
old, but,
right.
Writing things down is really something
just, yeah,
Western,
right.
That's how we started that. So it's hard to know, but we won't be here in 1,000 years to know
right.
how he has evolved, which is interesting enough.
That's for sure.
But it's also difficult to tell that you have things like that Seacothus fish that they caught in Africa,
right.
and yet it matches identical to its fossil version of it. And
right.
so it didn't evolve at all. It
right.
stayed pretty much exactly the way it was for millions and millions and millions of years. So it's possible that based on, brain size and all those things that go with it, that we have a set time of how fast it is that we evolve. But, evolution is only occurs when something happens that will benefit your species. And so if, getting dumber doesn't benefit your species, so we're hopefully not going to regress as humans backwards because it doesn't help our species. But
you haven't met my family.
Question that.
You haven't met my family.
Yeah.
Sorry, family.
I know. I have children, and sometimes I go, how did you survive this long?
Right.
I don't know where you got that, but but that's it'll be hard to tell. But yes, the consistency in the appearance has been there
yeah.
for a very, very, very long time.
One thing that really stood out to me when we were talking about the Native American, there's folklore and their stories, where you were talking about they were eating their young, not Native Americans were eating the Bigfoot's young, but Bigfoot was eating their young.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that they were vegetarians.
Oh.
But apparently not. So could you talk about that a little bit? Because I was really curious because that's now I get where the cannibal comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a very common story, in fact, that there is a female Bigfoot, and sometimes it's a male, but it depends on the location. And in fact, we have one here in where I'm from that's very prominent because it has landscape features associated with it.
Hmm.
And so typically the Bigfoot has a basket on their back and they grab children, small adults, and put them in their basket and then take them off and then they eat them. And so here, we have a very well-known cave that the local Miwok tribe believes was Bigfoot's cave, and that's where he would take his victims. And back in the 1960s, they actually excavated this cave, and there was human remains in the cave. And, of course, we know that they were purposely deposited there because they had gifts and stuff. And when we tried to give those human remains back to the tribe said, no way, those aren't our people. Those are who Bigfoot ate, and we don't want to have anything to do with it. And as it turned out, the DNA that came back for, and the dates too, did come back as predating the Miwok's presence here.
Oh my gosh.
In this particular location. I mean,
Now you've just made me even more scared to go in the dark into the woods, because I have a lot of meat to eat. do you get nervous going out now that you know that they are cannibals? No?
No, it doesn't. I mean, if I'm going out, I'm going out with evidence, man. There's going to be hair in my hands.
Right.
I'm gonna get everything I can. And that's actually, I laugh about this, because when I had my first sighting, I actually ran at them. And because I don't know what I was going to do, if I was going to smooch them or get them,
like,
in a headlock,
so,
and give them a noogie, you know, something. I don't know what I did, but I wasn't afraid at all. It wasn't the thing that kind of scared me a little more was that they really are a powerful animal. And it kind of dawned on me later that, and they're very fast and they're muscular, that had they wanted to, they probably could have picked me up and carried me away, and there was nothing anybody could do. I mean, I would try to make myself dead weight so they couldn't. Right. But that's a little frightening when you think of that. But my only worst fear is one day being in the bathroom and facing the window, and I see big eyes through the window.
Right.
Watching me.
He come chasing after you. He followed you home.
That would be my worst.
Right.
That would frighten me, for sure.
Well, we have a few more minutes left. I do want to talk a little bit about, a little more about the North American Wood Ape Conservancy.
Conservancy, yeah.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit, maybe like a story, a really good story that, if it's not even of you, but somebody else talks about another encounter with going out and doing research and...
Well, gosh, we have so many of them. Well, probably one of the best ones is that one of the gentlemen that we were with the first time was sitting in a hunting blind, and he got bum rushed by Bigfoot. And so, and a kind of a bum rush thing is kind of like that, you know, when an ape, you know, gets the trees,
right,
and you crash,
right,
it down, and it was just like that. And that was pretty terrifying. That poor man could barely walk back to camp. We had to help him. And then he threw up, and it was just, I couldn't get him to stop shaking because he really thought he was going to be killed because this animal was so aggressive.
Oh my
and
God.
Just really did not want him there. And the whole point of the hunting blind, of course, is that you're being shielded and you shouldn't be easily seen because you're reflecting the atmosphere around it. But that animal absolutely knew that he was there and was very, very mad about it. And so for me, that probably would have, if that had happened to me, I probably would have never gone back because I'm not, you know, I have to have the opportunity to grab the hair off before I'm killed.
Right.
So.
That would be scary. If people want to get involved, what by joining your organization, what can they get involved in? What can they do?
There's a membership page on there, and we have different levels of membership levels because we have access for the people that have been in the group a lot longer, have access to. And so you can be from any state. We don't care what state you're from. I'm obviously in California, and they're based out of mostly Oklahoma and Texas. And you know, if you have an honest interest and you want to be a part of something that is good, then, you know, we welcome that. And we welcome anybody who has a hunting or a scientific background, or even if you're just curious to know more. Because, you know, I always think in my mind, the more you know, the more you can look for it. You're not mistaking that black shadow for something. You're really being scientific about it. And then, you know, not going, oh, I think I saw something. Well, what did you see? Did you write it down? Did you, you know, do we know the date? Do you know the location where this happened? And that's primarily, if you can even just join and walk away with that education, that would be fantastic.
It sounds like a great time, and I'll have to, like I said, one of these days I want to go on a Bigfoot hunt. I've never actually done that, so I think it would be a blast until they come busting out of the trees. And I'll be
everybody says that until something happens. In the
right,
woods.
Right. I'll be first back to the car and already gone by the time you guys get there. Well, we really appreciate you being on the show. It's always great and great stories and great. And keep up the good work of your research. And hopefully one day we will be able to sit down across the table from a Bigfoot and have a great conversation. Probably not.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, he'd be like, you knew. But I really appreciate you, the work you do. And I thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. We'll go to woodache.org, and you can check out the membership there and all the upcoming events. And as always, thank you guys for tuning in, being a part of Truth Be Told. I always say you're my favorite co-host. Thank you for the questions and the chat. And also, please subscribe, share this show, and next time we have another great show for you guys. So always come back here on Fridays at 3 o'clock. And also, Robert Hensley on Monday. You got Minuteman Report, Bonnie Burkett on Wednesday at 3 o'clock for Truth Be Told Transformation. Until then, adios. Talk to you soon. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.